There we are, I think. Good.
That's great. Welcome, welcome, August team. Wonderful, wonderful humans. So we're going to start with something to get us in the mood. The mood is great. We have so much to talk about. Some genius is scheduling us. It's the Sun-Uranus conjunction right now, but I'll show you that later. But here's somebody, Angelique Kidjo, giving voice to Mother Earth. Here we go.
Don't ever let them hurt you in any way. And never let them steal and take the best of you. Keep building cities from the ground. We rise and weave the wave. Don't ever let them hurt you in any way. And never let them steal and take the best of you. Keep building cities from the ground. We rise and weave the wave. Mother Nature has a way of warning us. A time bomb set on a lost countdown. Do you hear it? Will you stop it? Won't you listen? We need each other now. We need each other now. Each one of us needs one of us. We need each other. Da 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 da. Don't ever let them hurt you in any way. Oh, never let them steal and take the best of you. Keep building cities from the ground. We rise and weave the wave. Mother Nature has a way of warning us. A time bomb set on a lost countdown. Will you find it? Will you stop it? Won't you listen? Amesiame neva miale benehi heyame. Amesiame kele gbancha erola nusilo. I know we are humans, but why can't we use the gift she's giving us? Mother Nature has a way of warning us. A time bomb set on a lost countdown. Do you hear it? Will you stop it? Won't you listen? We need each other now. We need each other now. Each one of us needs one of us. We need each other. Mother Nature has a way of warning us. A time bomb set on a lost countdown. Will you find it? Will you stop it? Won't you listen?
Oh, and do catch the background, because that was so Neptune. We're going to introduce everybody, and Neptune trining Mars in Cancer, protection, protect the Earth. That's so great. So welcome. What a splendid council of self-assembling rapid first responders here with so much knowledge and craft. And it's so wonderful to have fellow journeyers through the incredible opportunities being proffered to us by the Sky Earth story. So we know right behind us, you know, it was the exact Beltane Buddha's full moon lunar eclipse. Whoa, both of which are about, you know, calling in. It's the Taurus Scorpio axis of calling in from the invisible, come on into the manifest realm, you know, and part of our metaphors that we'll be animating is we're gathered to conjure our alchemical vessel. And as you know, I remain enchanted by the fact that the word vessel in all languages means container and boat. We're going to really play with this. But so our alchemical vessel and to which, as Sean brings up, well, as all of us bring up blessings and plants, we put them into the cauldron, you know, and then it's sort of a structural frame for our 7 weeks of gathering unfolding, that we'll fill the vessel, we'll drink from the vessel, and then we'll sail forth in the vessel and spiral blessings out into the world. So I just want to, so the sun and Uranus, I'm just going to show us a little bit about the dance and bring some of our team into play. So this is just the sky picture of now, and many of you know astrological charts, maps are just stylized factual maps. This is the Earth, this is me, this is Washington, D.C.-ish, this is the line of the horizon, this is east, this is west. That's the only thing different from a more usual map. But just to the sun and Uranus just conjoined at 18 Taurus just moments ago, and the sun's moved 1 degree. The image for 18 Taurus is a fresh new continent rising up out of the ocean. And we go, ooh, ooh. And we are so, fill in the blank, enthused to cooperate with Uranus, nature's evolutionary trickster genius in Taurus, you know, participatory animism, for a few more years, which I view as so opportune, but this is the beginning. It's just a powerful time. And then each night, just out there in the sky, because we want, you know, to weave intimacy, we can see Venus getting closer and closer to Mars. Each night, you're like, oh, Venus, very bright. Mars, you have to, it's kind of faint. But they will come together. They will join hands from Cancer backstage into Leo right before the summer solstice when they get married. So this theme of courtship to wedding in ourselves, in the sky, is all over. And then I just wanted to, by way of introducing Sean, I wanted to put him in the middle for the fun of it, because it's like, all right, ladies and gentlemen and tricksters of all stripes. So what we have here is Sean's astrological chart, where the planets were when he was born in the inner circle, and where the planets are now in the outer circle. Look at that! Look at Mars at 23 Cancer, right on his sun. It just is so thrilling to me. Going, yes, you're meant to be here, lad. All of your animated plant lore wisdom from all the traditions that you love, and you have the sun square Uranus, like me, only I'm reversed. You know, my sun's in Libra right here. My Uranus is right here, just for fun. So we are trickster co-cahooters, right? But anyway, I love that specificity, just for fun. You know, when I was looking at it, you know, it's like, yes, this course, this wants to happen. So welcome, Sean, with Mars on your sun.
Thank you. And this does indeed want to happen.
Say what?
This does indeed want to happen.
Yes, it wants to happen. And it's, again, you know, just for the fun of it, this is esoteric, inherited, ancestral, complex lore, 8th house, square Uranus in the 11th house of community, going, yes, you are welcome. And so we'll be honoring what makes us feel safe, and all of us, to create an atmosphere amongst us of support and safety and solace and those things. So, and then we are honored to be joined by one of Sean's mentor allies, Cornelia Benavides, whom I have yet to meet, but what a great way to meet, because I have her chart, and I just wanted to put it in the middle too, just for fun, because it's like, all right, ladies and gentlemen, look at this. In the center is Cornelia's chart, sun at 19 Capricorn. Look, the sun and Uranus are trining it right now. Happens every 84 years. The image for her sun is a hidden choir is singing. We go, ooh. But look at this. Neptune goes around every 165 years. Right now it's at 26 Pisces. And Cornelia's Mars is 26 Pisces, which is a vision of peace. And we go, oh, that's so great. And then just we're all in this dream together. So the Sean part of all of us, the Cornelia part of all of us, you know, and we can put in the fullness of time, people in the center, but this was just irresistible, you know, Cornelia. just Neptune, his big, big dream group mind. And it does say to your Mars, your dedication to a vision of peace. It says you are completely welcome in collective group mind. And then just for fun, we're tracking patterns. She's got Mars, 26 Pisces, Pluto, 26 Leo, right? So it's this Pisces-Leo conversation with her moon right here, and Uranus is squaring it. It's so exciting. Okay. But the Pisces-Leo conversation is a wonderful one, going, it's not performance, it's ritual healing magic, that, you know, for the earth, right? And we go, well, that's so great. And then just for fun, you know, we're looking at 19, 18, Sun at 19, Saturn at 19, Scorpio, one of my favorite degrees, because the medieval grumpy men hated it. They called it the accursed degree of the accursed sign, because its image is a woman draws back two dark curtains leading to a sacred pathway. Isn't that wonderful? And that's why the men didn't like it. They're like, you mean no priests? And we're like, yeah, no priests. Just direct here, just draw back the curtain and do the thing. And Uranus is opposite that, meaning through you and the larger whole thing, we get to unlock all past inquisitions. Is that a good idea? Mm-hmm. All right. And square her moon in Leo, which is a houseboat party. So then just for fun, Jupiter Uranus conjunction at 25 Cancer. That's my descendant. We must have even more fun in perpetuity, Cornelia. But Jupiter and Uranus are the two biggest path openers. You know, Jupiter and Uranus say, you tell us what, we'll do how. Well, and they trine her Mars. Oh, very exciting. Okay, that's wonderful. So more on that, but I just had to do it because it's so fun and it's so beautiful. And for our first last week, you know, Beltane, which was for everybody, and then here we are. And next week we will have all these Taurus planets with Libra rising. This is a live action chart. It's why I can never upgrade my computer operating system or I'll lose this. But just for fun, the rising sign just changed degrees from 26 Libra to 27 Libra, whose image is a person in deep gloom, unnoticed, a glowing circle of angels surrounds them. And I love that degree because when we're alone, we can be the person in deep gloom. It's been such a quirky time. It's available. Sean might speak to us about the epidemic of loneliness, you know. But when we gather, and we're gathering, we're the glowing circle of angels. We go, oh, that's so beautiful. So just a little bit about our frame, and then I'll hand it to Sean. We're going to play with our Saturn, our rhythm, present. Sean, bring in plants. We converse. We want to open it to counsel. Feel free to use the chat. Ask questions, make comments, all part of the woof. So so it's a council of heretics. Yeah, okay. Let me explain. The word heretic was a term of praise in early religion, even the Abrahamic religions, grumpy as they became, because it means cross-pollinating contributor to culture so that knowledge never degrades into dogma. Yes. And that's, you know, the Sun and Uranus, again, it's so wonderful, this call and response between us and the sky story and the plant story. Uranus is nature's evolutionary trickster genius. And so it says, you are assembling at the right time. You know, coyote trickster is a heretic, crosses borders to and fro in the dream world into incarnational actuality, into incarnational matter. Because we'll look at it again, but you can, for those who know astrology, wonderful. And if you don't, just let it wash over you. We have endogenous receptors that will absorb whatever it is we need. But Mars in Cancer trines Neptune, and that's sort of like the cahooting of Sean and Cornelia. Mars is on Sean's Sun, Neptune's on Cornelia's Mars. They're trined in the sky. Okay, Mars is trining Neptune. So we're in the fairy tale realm, the wondering realm, and then we'll honor briefly Saturn and Pisces and all. So we have our vessel. And then just to say, you know, world crazy cruelty, we're here to create atmospheric mist to waft over the hot conflagration of cruelty and eruption, which is pandemic. You know, we go, well, what is it to be human? And everybody can answer that. It's a useful thing to define our terms, but I like saying, well, one assignment, responsibility, opportunity is to discern the pattern of evolutionary opportunity, the liveliest possibilities available at any moment, and offer ourselves to that. So we go, that's part of what we're up to. And then, in you know, Sean and I have kahooted on radio and other events, and it's great, and this is a ongoing experiment. But I think it's where I so appreciate Sean's dedication is, you know, part of our opportunity responsibility as humans is to borrow qualities of intelligence from flora fauna, from the plants and animals with whom we share this earth. I go, right. So and then just part of our benevolence of what we're being proffered is Saturn is our capacity to dedicate our deepest dedication, our vessel. And Jupiter says, we'll follow the journey, but Jupiter says, whatever vessel of dedication you, me, we put on our altar, personal and collective, Jupiter says, I'll fill it. Right. So that's super fun. We'll look at that dance. It's kind of a call and response, you know. Never mind. That's right. We were talking about notes, and it's like, no, that's right. Sean never uses notes. And we're going to talk about insourcing. All the planets represent living qualities of intelligence that reside within us and connect us to the world, right? So as we mention them, you know, the endogenous planets, the parts of our inner democracy that we may be agents of outer democracy, kind of hum. They go, I hear that. So Saturn is authority, how we define things, dedicate, take vows. And because it's authority, it's the one part of us we most tend to outsource to incompetent leaders or anything that makes us cringe. And you know, some of you have been hanging with me for a while, so you can chant along with familiar material. But I find this so useful just in a daily practice. Like, where do we constrict and feel fear? Like, we're lonely, right? Just we go outsourced Saturn, insource, inhale it. You know, it lives right beneath our belly in our hara. It's our goat. Wait, I have goat props, but you can see them in the back there. Goats. You know, and we can see our goat returning. That's really good. So I like the more we gather to insource our own autonomy, we suck the chi out of outer authoritarianism, right? So that's fun. So, and then just a little bit to say, and then I'll hand it to yourself. And we can to and fro, but just to bring up the chart, so fun. We look at key angles between the planets. So here's Saturn in Pisces, just changed degrees. I wonder what it changed to. So Saturn in Pisces, last time was 1994. Saturn is our personal and collective dedication to the dream. It does trine Venus. It's like, yes, protection, Mother Earth, definitely. And its image is a foggy shore, spiritual reawakening, learning through undergrowing suffering in a period of darkness. Well, okay. And then it's sort of in keeping with the one air planet in our chart right now is Pluto. The thing that cheers us up is death. And danger, right? It gladdens our heart. But I did want to just note that we look at different angles, all ways of dividing the circle. And we are blessed by so many quintiles. Among my favorite angles, it's a 72-degree angle, what we get when we divide the circle by five. Five is sacred to Venus. And so we go, ooh, well, Saturn quintiles Uranus, 72-degree angle, almost exact. Well, it's so exciting. Yes, it is almost, it's as exact as it's applying by 30 seconds, right? As anything is in nature. So it says our dedication is our freedom. And Saturn and Uranus, disciplined wildness in harmony and in accord, are the what's called the two hosts of Aquarius, where Pluto is temporarily lodging, right? It just entered zero Aquarius, and it's all about community and good manners and boundaries and dedication. So, and then we'll explore as we get to them. Or one last little thing here. And then the moon in Capricorn. I like Daniel Gemario saying the moon in Capricorn, which sometimes gets a bad rap. He says that the oldest image is the council of wise citizens gathered, dedicated to the next seven generations. We go, thank you, thank you. And as we're talking and then pouring out into the early evening and the night when we deconvene, the moon will be trining 120-degree angle. So it's like, yes, we can do this with the help of the ancestors, and this wants to happen, and cooperating with nature's guiding genius and biomimicry and with our plant allies to help us. So the moon quintiles Neptune, pragmatic mysticism, a tradition of pragmatic mysticism. And, you know, I've read, everybody who's signed up, and people are still signing up, wonderful little introductory notes. And it's like, what a great team, bringing so much dedication and craft and the power of visualization and esoteric knowledge and everything. It's like, all right, let's engage everything. So Sean, I mean, I have many notes, but never mind those, right? But we talked about what plants might want to come in. Mars in Cancer says, you know, what makes us safe and boundaried. Did you want to bring in Devil's Club or wherever you want to go?
Yes. So there are so many plants who want to come in, but there are two plants who are speaking especially to this moment. Two plants and a god, which is a pretty good deal. So what first comes to mind, yes, is Devil's Club, which is a dear, dear ally of mine who I've not been in the presence of in several years now, but physically, but is always deeply with me. And so Devil's Club to me is the yang that creates the space for the return and blossoming of the yin. And so if we go all the way back in Taoist tradition, long before all the other things that are assigned to yin and yang, the yang is the bright sunny side of the hill. And the yin is the dark shady side of the hill. And so Devil's Club is in this very yin world of the rainforests of the Pacific coast. And for some reason, Isle Royale in Michigan, and there's no Devil's Club anywhere other than the Pacific coast, except at Isle Royale, but that's perhaps another story for another day. So Devil's Club, you know, is part of this very, very yin world, this temperate rainforest. Its range goes south into the redwoods in Northern California, and then goes all the way up into the Tongass rainforest of Alaska. And wherever Devil's Club grows, Devil's Club is one of the most important teachers of the people. And Devil's Club is a plant that thrives on disruption. Whenever there is a clear cut, or a landslide or a flood, and there's an opportunity for Devil's Club to come in, Devil's Club will come into that space, which makes it a very interesting plant to work with people. If the disruption has already happened in the person's life, then Devil's Club will tend to be very, very gentle. However, sometimes I'll be sitting with somebody and Devil's Club will show up as wanting to work with them. And I'll see that there's a place of tension in their life where they've been playing small. And if they were to show up completely, things would break. And so at that point, I will have a conversation with the person. They may or may not have to refer directly to it, but I will just say, speak of the nature of this plant that wants to come in, that wants to help to clear space, but that clearing of space can be kind of dramatic sometimes. And please dream with this tonight and come back to me tomorrow and tell me if there's a time for this plant in your life or not. So where the disruption has happened, where the yin of the rainforest has been disrupted, suddenly the sun is blazing down on these soils that are supposed to be moist and on these tender understory plants. And so Devil's Club comes in. And as Devil's Club comes in, first of all, Devil's Club is very spiky and very tall. So it creates a physical barrier against anything that might come and tromp on all the other beings trying to reemerge. And then, you know, it grows up, up, up. And it's growing upward. It's a plant that really buzzes with power. One of my favorite plant experiences was being with Devil's Club in springtime and feeling the plant invite me to taste the tip of the leaf bud. And as I tasted the tip of the leaf bud, there was first this tingling and then this surge that began at my root and then moved all the way through me. And it was as though the entire life of the returning forest was pulsing through me in that moment, potently energizing while also held and calm. And so Devil's Club is this pulsing, very young force of life returning. I think of, I guess we'll have two goddesses. Now that I think of it, I feel like Freyr of the Nordic tradition, who is that vitality of life returning to Earth, very much holds a place similar to Devil's Club, or an essence similar to Devil's Club in that way. But then as it grows up, Devil's Club has these giant leaves that are about the size of a dinner plate. And so underneath those leaves, there's shade. And under that shade, the moisture that was being lost due to the loss of the forest can be held. And there can be the little microclimate that then allows all of the smaller beings to begin to grow in a protected place. And so Bleeding Heart and Trillium are two of the flowers I've seen most often growing among Devil's Club, and Trillium being that invitation to opening, to coming into the world, and Bleeding Heart being that invitation to shed the tears that were held back by tension and allow the waters to flow. So Devil's Club is creating that space. And I find that Devil's Club also creates the space for a person to emerge more clearly and more fully as who they are. I remember the very, very first time I was called to work with Devil's Club. I was sitting with a mentor of mine, Margie Flint, in a circle where we were all working together with a man who was dealing with chronic Lyme disease. And he was somebody who had built his entire life story around, I'm the hard worker. I'm the one with the stamina to get things done, and I'm the provider. And then a couple of years of debilitating fatigue, and that identity was crumbling. And he was speaking in a very shaky way, and he was bent over. And it was as though his being was asking for permission to be there. And then I had a strong sense of Devil's Club. And so when Margie asked if there were any plants that wanted to come in, I said, well, I haven't really worked with this plant very much, but Devil's Club is feeling very clear. And she put a little bit of Devil's Club root bark in the man's hand, and he sat up straight and spoke in a clear, strong voice. Like, oh, you are coming to inhabit your space now. And of course, shortly after that, I began working with Devil's Club a little bit more, and things broke open in all kinds of interesting ways, and now I'm here.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking of a dear, dear friend with chronic Lyme. It's our friend Jerome Richard, and I'm going right just to put. He's so worthy. He's the founder of Organic Valley. He did all this without having email or internet or phone. I mean, like, I can't text him anyway. But I'm gonna visit him. I'll bring some Devil's Club just to go. Here, Jerome, put that in your hand there, because yeah, we want another round. So. Yeah, I mean, to and fro, but all that you say is so perfect, you know, strength in service to protection, you know, as really humming Mars and Cancer. And then the tears, it's very watery, right? So we have one fire planet, you know, woof, woof, it's Jupiter for a moment. Jupiter's image is the music of the spheres. So everything reporting in for Earth, boom, boom. One air, Pluto. Death and rebirth and danger gladdens our heart. Okay, all right. And then four water. So it's earth, water, you know, manifest and yin. So when we get, it's like what you were saying, Sean, this much water, ooh, is as though for everybody on some level, how we're calibrated in, you know, small things may elicit strong feeling. Ooh. As though anything we couldn't afford to feel from fill in the year you were born is now. So we're becoming kind of emotionally current, but it might feel overwhelming. But like all entheogenic journeys, which we may want to bring in the course of our thing, it's like flow with it, flow with it. It's stronger than you. Let go of control. And then I just wanted to bring in just a snippet of Fairy Tale. Is that okay with yourself, Sean?
Absolutely.
So just it's a fairy tale I go to all the time, but it's so here. It's like the plants, you know, are calling, you know, to you, and you are their voice. They want it, they want in now. So Mars trine Neptune, 120 degree angle, like fushba, strong feelings. But it says, you know, everything in the fairy world, And one of my favorite fairy tales is the tale of the Prince Carneta. And it's about how a youth becomes a wise leader. And the fairy tale begins with a betrayal. And it says, like happens in life, very often the fairy tale begins with a betrayal. One is tricked into a journey one didn't necessarily want to take, but it's going to turn out to be good for everybody. But almost always accompanied by a wise animal, Mars, our instinct, our wisdom. So Prince Carneta sets forth with his wise pony, but they don't really know what they're supposed to do. They know they've been tricked into it and it's dangerous. And they encounter a Sufi beggar. Now, fairy tale etiquette, however we treat everyone is important, but certainly those disguised as lesser than, however we tip waitresses, right, is really important. And so the Sufi beggar says to us, you know, Carneta and his pony, you don't know where you're going, do you? No, we don't. And then here comes the Mars part. And he says, take this iron ball. It's so great because iron is sacred to Mars, right? We're just studying these correspondences. Mars is red. It really is red. You'll see it in the sky. It's red. And it's, you know, stimulants and cinnamon and spices, you know, but it's also iron. So the Sufi beggar says, take this iron ball, Mars is our desire, and throw it and follow it wherever it goes. I'm just humming this out to all of us. And so they do, the Prince Caneta and his pony, they follow the iron ball, and being iron, it spirals and is connected to the whole magnetic, you know, rotational orbital cycle of the planets. And it takes them to the fairy world, right? And in the fairy world is where they have an understanding of their task, and they are accoutred with whatever they need to carry on. So I just love that as part of what you were saying, you know, so for us to, if we don't know what to do, take the iron ball of our desire and throw it, see where it goes as it spirals around and takes us to the dream world, the fairy world, the to and fro world, you know, and Neptune, it's very in the sky story now, and then Neptune quintiles the moon, and it's like, right, this is our task, right, team? It's what flora, fauna, fungi would want us to cooperate with, to redesign the entire human cultural interface with nature. A small task, you know, before lunch, and then they'll have something else for us. But it's like, yes, redesigning, but with help, you know, solve a coagula, dissolve and reimagine. And I think we've talked about this, Sean, but out and about, you know, in my own life too, it's like old structures are dissolving to be reimagined. The new ones aren't quite in place. Does that feel right to yourself?
It does. And it makes me have a wonderful heretical pairing of texts come together. Because I think about Antonio Gramsci, the great Marxist cultural theorist, writing in the Italian prison under Mussolini, saying, the old world is dying and the new world has not yet been born. Now is the time of monsters. But then I also remember when I was very little, my favorite book was There's a Monster at the End of This Book, which is Grover from Sesame Street on every page, putting up all the walls to prevent the monster from coming through, because there's a monster at the end of the book. And then you get to the end of the book and the monster is Grover.
That's and cute. So,
yeah, now is the time of monsters. We can choose what kind of monsters.
Right. And again, and anything that causes us fear, well, this is a daily practice I've been encouraging in others and myself, you know, just to notice how moment to moment, you know, hour to hour, we outsource Saturn with fear, like even like have to call the dentist, and it's like, no, inhale authority from the dentist, the thing, right? And just to kind of put this on our altar, you know, so that we observe and then have the metaphoric dance moves to go, whoa. And, you know, it's good to have a group because it's wonderfully tricky. I was just in California on a kind of, yes, endogenous indigenuity Majnun tour of varying degrees of success. But I was, you know, working a lot about insourcing our authority. But before the first big talk at Bioneers Conference, I felt dread. You know, I did. And I was like, God, I've outsourced my authority to the lecture I'm preparing on how to not outsource your authority. Oh, it's very tricky and witty. But once you know, it's a trickster kind of positive comeuppance going, okay, that's right. It keeps going. And I think for us to cultivate an affectionate, witty regard for our befoiblements is good, going, oh, you cute little delinquent.
Caroline?
Yes.
This is Evangeline. What you're talking about is fascinating because I was writing about my journal this week. And I think there's a saying that says, when you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him.
Yes, exactly.
And I've been thinking recently about these times that seem, in this monster business, we see these fearful things, and then we just rush to gurus and characters who want to tell us what we need to be doing. And we really need to be paying attention to doing what we can do where we are. I mean, that's really what we need to be doing. But it's this time when there's we, like you said, there's something to be fearful of. And so right away, we want to find someone who's going to give us the answer before we even live through the situation. So just
putting
some fire into your story there.
No, that's wonderful. And it also, the other part of the tale of Canetta that I love too, that you're just sort of invoking, right? Which is, what is the antidote to fear? You know, and so Canetta and his wise pony, they come to a burning river. And the wise pony says to Canetta, part of ourselves, let go of control. Let my reins be slack. And you hold on tight, because I know how to get us through this. And so that's what the Canetta part of ourselves does. He goes, okay, the reins are slack. I'm holding on tight. And they soar over the burning river. And the wise pony says, how are you doing? And Canetta part of ourselves says, barely alive. And the pony says, that's fantastic. If you're barely alive, this is going to work out great. And then they soar up the glass mountain and attain the waters of life and save the world. That's the fast wrap up of that thing. But I love this because we have so much of ourselves to access. So Mars right now, such a strong theme, you know, our dedication and our dedication to our animal allies. But it also says, you know, our Mars is a part of ourselves that knows what to do when the mind does not. You know, so let go of control. And this is always a Pluto thing. Let go of control. Hold on tight. Because our Mars knows where to jump, what to do. It's a first responder. It's aroused in order to help. You know, so I just wanted to yeah, and then, you know, it's well, we get to shapeshift and play too from scapegoat, right? Our scapegoat. We are transforming our scapegoat into our escape goat. and even escapade goat, I think. All dedicated to, oh, never mind the notes. Right. But it is dream time, fairy time. So I don't know how many of you have felt what a quirky time it's been. The time really has a mind of its own. It's like, ooh. And that's why we want to let go of control and flow with it. It's like the fate of our lives and the fate of the world is like releasing resistance. And where do you want to go? And seeing where the path opens. Does that feel right to you, Sean, or to anybody? Because we've been talking about what a quirky time it is. And it's like, and also, are we going to let people know we're giving this course? Well, in the fullness of time, no sense telling them too soon.
Yes. Well, and it's been a very foggy time on many levels, and a very watery time on many levels. Beltane here was a day of flooding where we had 6 inches of rain, and there were 2 feet of water on the road as the river rose up to meet us. And in the morning, I was all grumbly about trying to deal with the flood. And then when the sun came out at noon, it was, oh, we've been given this island on which to watch things coming to life. And the first violets grew up that day, and the buds came on the blackthorn. And for me, one of the most important allies in this time has been one of my primary medicines of clarity, which is calamus. A chorus calamus grows in the mucky, muddy edges of the water. And then it grows up into this bright green, reedy flower with a green or yellow spathe, depending on the species. And its root is very fiery and very aromatic and brings a very sudden clarity. And in Chinese medicine, they speak of calamus as the medicine that clears the dampness. That clears the dampness that clouds the orifices of the heart. And the Sanskrit name for calamus is vaka, meaning voice. And so it's bringing the heart and the voice together. And for me, I very deeply associate it with That clarity of vision when there's too much noise pouring in, be it sound or be it bright lights or be it emotional noise. And certainly we've had no shortage of turmoil in the ethers. It helps to relight that fire of the heart so that perception can clear. And then so voice can flow from perception. And for me, it's also very deeply linked with a God who's very much with me through times like these, who is Mananaan MacLear, Mananaan, the son of the infinite sea of being, who. There are questions in the Irish tradition about who is the oldest being, whether it's Mananaan or whether it's Ao, the salmon who dwells at the in the well that all the waters have their source from, eating the nuts of the nine hazel trees of wisdom, or whether it's the Kayach, the veiled woman. But all three are of a similar age. And Mananaan is really interesting in relation to this concept of water and fire and clarity and concealment. Because when the Tuatha Dé, the people of the gods, the tribe of of people who had gone north to learn the rune, the rune mór, the great mystery, left this world because the people who had come to Ireland had ways that did not align with their way of being. And Cornelia's teacher, Victor Anderson, described their ways as kinder and less civilized. And so Mananaan, who was their elder and their teacher, gathered them at the mouth of the Boyne and drew them down into the burial mound, the Shee, the Tuatha Dé became the Dé na Shee, the people of the mounds, and into the lakes and into the holy wells and into the ocean. And he chanted a song called the Cloak of Mananaan that became a cloak of mist to conceal the other world. But at the same time, he will come to those who require vision and require initiation. And if they pass the test, very often the test of treating the beggar kindly, he will place in their hands a silver branch. And if you shake the silver branch, you'll hear the music that weaves all the worlds. And if you grasp a silver branch and open your eyes, and open your eyes again, as Terry Pratchett might say, then you will see into the other world and see into the well where all their waters have their source. And I love how John Moriarty speaks of the experience, as he said, where he says that he learned that being human was a habit that could be broken. And how to break that habit and swim in other forms, and then how to come back to this form. And so that clarity of voice is what we speak when we come back into ourselves, having remembered that we're everything. And so Mananaan and Calamus are very kindred to me. And then flash forward to the end of our journey on the summer solstice. All the people on the Isle of Man pay their rent to Mananaan by going to the highest hill, bringing offerings of reeds and rushes.
I've been to the Isle of Man
Oh, yes.
for the motorcycle TT races with a completely delinquent, terrifying Five Planets and Aries boyfriend. I was young, but anyway, but I have been there, the pagan underneath the thing. But yes. I don't know if I was jumping in on top of what you were about to say.
No, but one more thing I would say that's fascinating about man is that the Manx language a few decades ago was one of the languages closest to extinction in the world. And starting with very young children, the language has now been brought completely back to life. It's one of the great success stories of linguistic revival and renewal, and the language again becoming part of how people speak their story of the world.
And I just want to bring in our friend David Grimes' friend, Chief Marie, chief of the Athabascans in Alaska. When she was dying, she was one of the last speakers of Athabascan, and her tribe was concerned that the language would die with her. And she was very fierce. She was like, no, the language comes from the land. If you maintain your connection to the land, the language will bubble back up. And because it's so watery right now, and Mars trines Neptune, it's our concern for the ocean and the creatures of the ocean. And we have people in our council who have a deep connection to ocean and to whales and to all those beings. And part of what I almost said a few paragraphs back is because we have this meeting and our next meeting with planets in Taurus, Libra rising. These are the two Venus realms. Libra is cultural Venus. Taurus is participatory animism Venus. And so it says before all of us, you know, to make a deep dedication to being a cultural agent on behalf of what we love and are in nature, right? On behalf of the, because everything's in danger, right? I mean, it is. And so, you know, to protect as much as possible. And then I have a whole little piece to bring in about being ready for the moment, but don't know if you wanted to say something before I did that.
No, let's let that flow. And
okay.
Yeah, that kind of is emerging.
So part of the great opportunity of us gathering and such a great team of humans self-assembled, again, some genius is scheduling us and whatever our craft be, Max Dashu says craft means power from dedication. So whatever our craft be, you know, dancing us into place. And Saturn, you know, making, you know, now and planting seeds that we take through the ensuing week and the ensuing 7 weeks on our way to the wedding, you know, but it's about being ready for the moment. And what I mean by that is, we tie it into, you know, the news, which is a collective dream and our own selves. And so part of what I've been, you know, honoring and a great trickster move is, you know, when school kids in Tennessee were gathering at the state capitol and chanting, ban books, ban drag, kids are in body bags, right? And two Black members of the state government supported them and gave them a voice, right? And then were booted out by the vile, you know, head of the thing who had his comeuppance. It's like a fairy tale. The two Justins who were then reinstated, but they were so ready for this moment. And the woman, the white woman who also was supporting them, these are people who had been dedicated to collective well-being since they were 15. I mean, just, and when this moment opened, you know, a moment of tyranny, they were ready to be the antidote. So well spoken. There's a great thing that Richard found that we'll play for you next week. Somebody doing a great riff on this, but they were so and completely possessed of Saturn. Both of those Justins were born when Saturn was in Pisces. This is their Saturn return, and that's what it looks like. Dedicated to collective well-being with all eloquence there, and I was so impressed at, you know, as they triumphantly re-entered where they'd been exiled from, you know, not holding back. Just, you know, I loved, I think it was Justin Pearson saying, now, you know, the tyrants are in the find out part of our adventure, right? Which was perfect, because the vile person who really was like a cartoon of a white supremacist guy who was like, you know, it turns out all kinds of child pornography graft, and he had to resign, right? And so it's, oh, trickster move. So, you know, and before that, I mean, our eyes on the news there right after the so many shootings, the shooting in Tennessee, so, I mean, so much cruelty in Tennessee, you know. And I just noted this moment. It was a moment on Fox News, and there was a Fox News guy and a woman just in the crowd behind him saying, "Aren't you tired of reporting on this story?" And she was so focused that the Fox News camera came right in on her, and the Fox News guy stepped away, and she had her 5 minutes. She, you know, just by serendipity and synchronicity, she'd been a survivor of a shooting in Wisconsin on July 4th. She happened to be in Nashville visiting her sister-in-law when the shooting happened again, and she happened to be right in back of the Fox News guy, and she, you know, guns, number one killer of children, more than cars, more than anything, you know, and all you Fox News people, the trouble on the border is largely due to our loose gun laws in which drug gangs are taking our guns. Just a little appeal to the Fox News thing. So that was sort of like the precursor going, she was ready, you know, and then, you know, we see that. And then the Justins and the Gloria, they were ready. And part of our dedication is, may we cultivate our dedication so that whenever the path opens for us to be of positive contribution, we're ready, you know. So that's part of that dynamic. And he says, this is the democracy that changes the status quo, said Justin Pierce's, right? And then we're in the find out portion of the adventure. And it was also on Easter, right? And he was speaking at his father's church, and he goes, after the crucifixion, which is, they got booted out on Good Friday. I mean, talk about, you know, and redemption on Easter. And we use everything. So we love that. And that's also part of, you know, for every toxic tyranny, we want to animate, you know, a tonic metaphoric reality. So there's that.
I think about the generations of preparation involved in that readiness too. It's like we see the emergent moment, but I don't remember which of the Justins it was, but one of them was mentored by Diane Nash. And Diane Nash was one of the young students in Tennessee who was part of the major sit-ins that were Tennessee's contribution to civil rights movement. And David Halberstam, in his wonderful book, The Children, profiled those young students and talked about the people who were mentoring them. And there's so much that goes back to the black and white conscientious objectors to World War II, who were sent together into accidentally integrated prison camps and studied what Gandhi was writing while studying the Bible together. And out of that came the whole method and concept of active creative nonviolence that then spread through the Black church in the South. And then, like, all those many years of all these people preparing and then staying prepared for the moments that arise when the voices can come through, the moments that Seamus Heaney speaks of when hope and history rhyme.
So feel free, everyone, to type in or to unmute. We'll just see how it happens. We're pretty quite. If you have a question or a comment, that's, you know, welcome now as we slowly convene an actual council vessel. And then just to keep up with ourselves, so into our vessel, Sean, we have calamus. Yes. Right, the minute you said that, and you said that somebody you knew when they smoked cannabis would put calamus in it, and I go, what a good idea! Mm-hmm. What a good idea for lucid thing. And it's like, yes, sign me up for that.
Mugwort works wonderfully there as well, because
I can do that.
Because mugwort bridges. Between, like, we think of mugwort for the people who are too much in this world and need to be able to dream and vision. But Matthew Wood taught me that the opposite is also true. The people who are always up in the ethers and can't anchor their vision back down, it helps to walk in this world. And so, so often with artists of all kinds who find, that cannabis opens their inspiration, but then they get a little bit too spacey to actually create. I put a little mugwort, have them put a little mugwort in with their cannabis. And then if they're a singer or a writer, calamus will then help to bring the language aspect of that.
Uh-huh. So calamus and mugwort are friends.
Yes.
And here's, I happen to have the mugwort burning, telepathic, telepathic wafting to everybody. So much about mugwort, protector again. I mean, these, we want protection and guidance. Well, I love that mugwort is protection of borders and boundaries, and it's dreaming. Mm-hmm. So we want to be protected in order to dream, which is very much in our theme. So that's super great. And then, you know, I was looking over some of the things you said in the past, Sean, about how low dopamine diminishes executive function. I'm like, right, to elevate dopamine and executive function in all of us. It's like, oh, yes, let's have more Saturn. Because what's available to us is to actually, this is not an abstract time. It's to, you know, magnetize metaphor into matter. It wants to happen, right? And for all of us to define everything on our own terms, but I like saying magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything. I mean, everything is not condone, not ever, but to spiral with the thing. So you said to elevate dopamine because, you know, executive function, you know, who here would like more executive function? I would. Yeah, exactly. And because the nature of now is to actually improve manifest molecular reality, right? And that's in everybody's personal life and collective life, that we can, you know, have sufficient windfall of wherewithal to dree our weird, again, fabulous Celtic phrase, to play our role in destiny, to be ready for the moment, you know, to be first responders, you know, to feel what's needed and respond. That's so wonderful. So to elevate dopamine, you were saying Damiana, Bacopa, Lobelia. I don't know any of those beings.
Yes. Oh, wonderful. And I'll briefly introduce the being of dopamine as well, who we hear lots of people talk about, but not often in a fully coherent way. It's one thing to remember when we talk about any molecule and its influence on consciousness is Timothy Leary's laws apply. It's not just the dosage, it's the set and setting that shape the experience as well. And that's as true of our own neurotransmitters as it is of anything else. And so right now we're hearing all this, oh, you're just doing this for the dopamine hit. Well, I mean, dopamine is our molecule of motivation and pleasure. So yes, but it's the molecule that teaches us to learn how to move in an outward way, in a fluid way, to achieve what it is that our beings most believe that we need. And so the problem with, like, we hear all these problems about smartphones and dopamine. Well, the problem is the human smartphone relationship and what's the action that's being reinforced rather than the molecule that's reinforcing the action. And so I actually like to work very consciously with dopamine with people, to work with dopamine boosting herbs, unless you're somebody with a history of psychosis in your family, in which case you might want to be a little bit cautious. just sit next to them.
Psychic, yeah. Psychotic. Well, dosage, right? Dosage is everything, right?
Yeah. But I like to have people consciously work with the thing they want to cultivate in their lives. And so take these herbs that are elevating your dopamine and go for a walk. Take these herbs that are elevating dopamine and go play an instrument. Take these herbs that are elevating dopamine and go engage in whatever practice it is that you're wanting to bring into your life and you're wanting to make yourself want more. Bacopa, which is a precursor, which contains the L-DOPA, which is a precursor to dopamine, is one of those herbs. It breaks down pretty quickly in our livers and our digestive tracts. So Damiana, which is the herb that makes it feel good to have a body, is wonderful at slowing the breakdown of dopamine and also the breakdown of phenethylamine, which is one of our love and connection molecules. And so that helps the Bacopa, the L-Dopa and the Bacopa to persist. And then lobelia makes us use dopamine more efficiently, among other things. But lobelia is also the great opener of the way, the remover of tension, the opener of circulation. I think of lobelia as the legba of herbs, because lobelia is always there as the opener of the way.
So a crossroads kind of being?
Mm-hmm.
Crossroads.
Okay, let's see.
There was a human speaking.
Oh, a human. All right, am I? Oh, here I am. Okay.
Yeah.
What I wanted to add to this, which I think has been interesting for me, is that this time has been a focus on the things that historically seem like, oh, these are faults, like dreaming and being dreamy and being distracted by your creativity or nostalgia. You know, that these are all somehow negative things. But as I ruminated on this and thought about why I was going back to certain periods of time and being pushed to work on that, whether it was 1978 or whether it was 1986, that I kept thinking back and thinking back and saying, oh, well, I'm just, you know, somehow emotionally I'm you know, not happy somehow, so I keep throwing myself back. And then I got sort of a click that said, no, you're looking at this wrong. And I've realized that the things that we are nostalgic about, at least for me, and it may be also for others, is a time of examining your successes and also the successes of the super conscious that has brought us to this point. And even though right now the stakes seem to be even higher than whatever happened back then, that we are being again brought to a place of to use what we learned from those times and how we were brought to this place, and that we're still here, we're still alive, and we are needed. And to not discount those nostalgias and those dreams that you had of the past, because they empower you and they are a part of your power.
You mentioned 1978 and 1986 in particular, and I was wondering if you could just briefly speak about the significance of those times and why they feel resonant for you right now.
Well, 1978 was the year that I went from Michigan, where I had grown up. Even though I was born in Texas, I grew up in Michigan. And I moved after I graduated from college to San Francisco. And 1978 was a heavy year of, as San Francisco as a city struggled with all of its idealisms and the fact that gay people and all the LGBTQ people were coming out and establishing their rainbow flag and not only asking for rights, but demanding their rights. And it was also a time of great artistry and creativity and there was much danger all around us, whether it was Jim Jones or whether it was planes being hijacked. I mean, it was a very intense time. And so one part of it was joyful and freedom loving and creative. And the other point was, hey, wait a minute, you know, some very serious issues here need to be addressed. And I feel that this time is very much like that time, except it's even more so because somehow there's more of an explosiveness in the energy, you know, even more so than then. But I feel that what we learned then that enabled us to live to now needs to be understood and accessed in order to take it to the next level we need to go and have this great experiment, shall we say, to have a live birth, that we are all looking for a live birth. And then 1986 was the year that my teacher, Victor Anderson, and inner visions that were being pushed inside of me to undertake this great quest to Hawaii that I wrote a book about called Journey for a Tomorrow. And that was such an amazing time. And I was having these feelings of like, oh, well, I was young and full of energy. And, you know, now I have all these responsibilities and, you know, who am I now? And, you know, spirit was just kicking my butt and saying, no, you got to read your own book and realize that, you know, it's all right here. And you need to use the tools of the past to help ground you in your present and help create the future. And I think Casey, once you Caroline, you actually said something like that once in when I was listening to you another time. And I feel that, that's what we're doing.
Right. Yeah. And Mars in Cancer, and there's Sean Cancer. Cancer is associated with history. History is the womb of time. Yeah. And I think there's much resonance. Yeah, certainly those dates are a lot important. 1978, 1986, oh my God, you know, a very important resonant. And it's like everything is reporting in, right? All the different chapters of our lives. But I also love a stamp that I have that I put on envelopes, and it says, time and trouble may tame a wild young woman, but a wild old woman is untamable by any force, right?
Mm. Wow, you know, wow.
It's good. It's just a little, you can put it on all the envelopes, right? And it just lightens everybody's heart. Because see, Uranus chimes in, you know, as these are all deconditioning, liberating planets, deconditioning from even everything in our tradition, being heretics, question, you know, everything into the cauldron, you know, with our own criterion, you know, is it equal? Is it equal Mars and Venus? Is it equal humans and the rest of our kin? Is trickster welcome? Can the truth be said without cringing? Yes, we let it out. No, we pour it back in. But Uranus says, I think, to all of us, you know, when before have really cool people been beginning a significant chapter of their lives in their 50s, 60s, 70s? I see people in their 80s. And we go, not often. And Uranus chimes in and says, exactly, you know, we're all part of an experiment on behalf of the Earth herself. You know, it's like, right, what a rousing thing. So yeah, that's great. So let's honoring our cauldron, Sean, right? And Cornelia and everybody. So in the cauldron we have calamus for clarity, lucidity. We have executive function support, right? That which is a very Saturn thing going, right, confidence in a good way, confido would be super good, confidence, curiosity. And you said that Wormwood wanted to show up because you found a hidden bottle of absinthe in your yurt.
Yes. So Wormwood is a wonderful, wonderful plant. Bridges together many qualities in many realms. And its name, The etymology of his name in English is far more interesting than one might guess. It has nothing to do with worms and everything to do with the defense of our truest selves. So it comes from the Saxon ver mod, which it's not a perfect etymology, but it is a perfect etymology at the same time. It's not an academically perfect etymology, but I feel like Del Pendle really captured the essence when he said ver mod means defender of the mind. And so it's lighting that fire of being, and especially wormwood is an ally of those who have been beaten down and oppressed and need to rekindle that spark at the heart of their being to bring life and blood flowing into them again. Culpepper spoke of wormwood as the herb that Mars blessed when Mars grew tired of war and wanted, instead of being cursed for causing people suffering, to instead be praised for bringing the fire of life and the patience for that fire to blaze forth. And then, of course, there's also the other side of wormwood, which is this wonderful shimmery distillation, which I believe was actually probably, I don't remember who made it, but whoever made it was making it through Dale Pendle's instructions, because pretty much anybody who makes absinthe on their own now is following, with a home still, is following his instructions.
I knew Dale.
And it's, and to me, there is this wonderful, the absinthe aspect of wormwood is this wonderful shimmer. And I will always remember the very first time I had absinthe was in Alberta. And an herbalist friend shared, no, it was the second time I had absinthe, actually. The first time I had absinthe was from Del Pendle. And he was teaching in Massachusetts. And I waited a long time at the end of the line to ask him a complicated question, because I didn't want to preempt other people's quicker questions. And so the absinthe kept getting passed back down the line, and I wandered outside and I looked on the water and I saw the light on the water and I thought, oh, that looks like a Monet painting. And then I realized, oh, that's because Monet was drinking absinthe.
But it does indeed make the heart grow fonder, right?
It does, yes. But when I was drinking it in Alberta, I walked outside right afterward, and the aurora was shimmering and was the exact same quality of light and the exact same color as the absinthe. And so to me, it's so interesting, because on the one hand, it can be that blazing fire that brings you back into the life of this world. On the other hand, it can be that shimmer of the other world that reminds you of a different way of moving through time and space.
And then Cornelia says, worm was also another name for dragon once upon a time. Wait, I have high props here. Dragons, that's right. They go, yay, we're good. What do they say? What do they say? They say what? They say, what does Ursula Le Guin say? Those who do not listen to dragons are doomed to live out the nightmares of politicians. Right. They were so happy that you called them forth. They sit on my chair, and they were like, "Oh, we're good to go on." Okay, so that's good. Yeah, verm. That's right. So that's great. And then again, before we deconvene, we're filling our vessel, but we have a number of milkweed enthusiasts here. Can we just honor the milkweed? And we should say that, you know, the naming of the plant is invoking the reality. So even though we don't live in Michigan or the Pacific Northwest, or some of us do, but Devil's Club is, you know, and then we have our friend Micah who makes tincture of Devil's Club, and I go, right, what a good idea. But so the naming is part of our council. We're calling them in and we're putting them in our vessel, and they seem to be getting along well, right? The calamus and cannabis, mm-hmm. Calamus, cannabis, mugwort, bacopa, damiana, lobelia. And can we add milkweed just because we have such enthusiasts here? And
absolutely.
It's got such resonance, you know, and we want to keep the butterflies alive. And then you'd said that your favorite is pleurisy root milkweed.
Yes, which is Asclepias tuberosa. And so we have the great invocation of Asclepias and the Asclepion and its name. But pleurisy root is a milkweed whose root helps to lubricate the fascia. And so the pleura are the fascia around our lungs. And the pericardium is the fascia around our heart. And so there's a deep heart-lung affinity the pleurisy root has. But then it's also, Lise Wolf in Minnesota talks about it as the great remedy for frozen shoulder. Because it's the same kind of tissue.
And could you make the connection that the monarch butterflies need the milkweed? And are they part of our heart and lung experience, the heart and lung of the earth, in that corresponding quality?
Yeah. Well, and they're riding on the free flow of the warm wind.
And again, protecting, you know, to make our dedication, whatever resonates, you know, that whatever, well, I love Mars and Cancer, and then yourself as a Cancer, the great astrological joke from my friend Jade Jacobs, Cancer is just a Scorpio in a house coat. It's such a good joke, because it's true. Every sign has its PR. I'm very sensitive. I'm just as weird, but I have a different cover.
Right. Well, I guess it's especially funny given my ascendant.
Yes, that's right. So you're a double Scorpio kind of a person, and eighth house. Oh my God. Right. But the Uranus and Libras drawing your charm to proffer your gifts in the community. Come out. It's safe. There we go. Whoever wants blessings of feeling and being safe. It's not a trick, right? It's not a trick. But, you know, Mars trine Neptune says, you know, wafting and reciprocal blessing, you know, who wants to feel safe and then be agents of safety? It's part of, you know, as we gather in our vessel, our alchemical vessel, in which we're going to get in and set sail, because it's a boat. Our vessel's a boat. I don't know. It continues to amuse me forever. I so like it. So we've got the milkweed in there, the Asclepias tuberosa. And then just for the fun of it, Venus in the sky, you know, is quintile Chiron, little planetoid, who is the centaur mentor and the founder of the Asclepions. And so it's like feeling from antiquity and from the ancient rituals that are present now to be brought alive through each of us in a fresh form. It's like whatever we love, whatever we've studied, you know, we are proffered the opportunity to bring it alive again through fresh expression, the fresh telling of the story and all. But the quintile to Chiron in Aries, 51-year orbit, but yeah, and then just, you know, you can incantate, because many of you know this, but, you know, Chiron 2,500 years ago is the first mentor. He's a centaur. He's a centaur mentor, right? Steve Behrman says, going to take a centaur mentor journey. He lives in a cave because he's half horse, but he is the most knowledgeable and cultivated and kindest of all beings. So he really represents the right relationship of wild nature, thin membrane, human culture, our task, right? To remember, re-put it together, going, and we don't even need to know how to do it. We just want to dedicate to what? Just something to put on our work table that we'll take through, you know, our journey together. Each planet, part of ourselves that connects us to the world, you know, part of our assignment really is to give to each part of our psyche the work it does best. And once again, I think Saturn is least understood. Saturn is a part of us that is really good at defining things, dedicating, taking vows, but it's terrible at how. How am I going to do this? How are we going to save the world? How are we going to just then just ancestral downloads of futility and depression cascade? Because Saturn's job is what, not how. Jupiter and Uranus chime in, you know, to each of us, and especially now, and say, we'll do how, do common sense things, because that's intentional magic too, but not to let the compelling illusion of realism be an imaginative impediment. You know, as David Grime says, dream big and play fair. And then I was saying to him something that you were resonating, Sean, Saturn and Pisces, it's like, yes, the flow, we're all aspiring and supporting this in each other. You know, and I was saying, like, if we all did what we knew, we'd be in fantastic shape, you know, to get out of our own way. And I love David Grime saying, well, we should always get out of our own way so the will of heaven can move through us. And it's like, and earth. And we go, yeah, that's really great. So Chiron starts a school for future cultural heroes, tricksters, really. You know, he teaches Orpheus how to play the lute and Asclepius how to be the Greek god of healing, and many not so well-known students, but healing and art, one thing. And I also love the detail that Chiron's students, their tasks are impossible, and they're always successful after they study with Chiron. So I love that. So in Chiron's mythology, to be underestimated is considered a positive strategic advantage. So with all this water and so strong Neptune, it's the water reflects reversal. So I love that when people go, those people don't respect me, or they won't let me in, or they don't approve of me. You know, trickster Chiron goes, that's excellent. You get into Chiron's school. How fortunate. You wouldn't want to go through that door anyway, you know? And so it's like, so we're composting all whaley, right? So we love, you know, nostalgia, right? But I love the Prospodokian nostalgia, sure ain't what it used to be. Okay, so it's the playfulness with words. But yeah, and then for our purposes, Chiron through antiquity, well, we're composting whaley, you know, you know, journeys throughout the Mediterranean antiquity and founds the Asclepions, right? So the cultural centers of intentional dreaming. This is very happening now. Saturn, intention in Pisces, dreaming. Neptune in Pisces, dreaming, trining Mars. What is it we each want? You know, the whole Western tradition of esoteric, you know, starts as the path of desire. And they say, what do you desire? Something for each of us to wonder and write down, if possible, this week. Because I just remember our first lessons back in 1970 mystery school and just said, do not turn the page, do not do anything until you write down what do you want, and don't make it abstract. World peace. Now, what's a specific thing? And you don't say it to anybody, but each day, and see, this is very available now, you image it as a desirable condition. And they said the path of desire is intrinsically will guide one so that one's desires are always in accord with what is best for the larger community. It's a self-educating, but Mars trine Neptune and the Asclepions are available. So Chiron's hopping up and down and saying, oh, look at these worthy beings. You know, is there a dedication to dreaming? And we go, there is. And so people would be chanted down into the dream incubation chamber, having dedicated to having a healing dream for themselves and their community. Always those things together. They'd have a dream. We have records, right? And then it was common sense at the time. Everybody knew that they would only have the power of their dream once they'd given outward creative expression to this inner experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think this is really important. It's like there's a world of difference between having an insight about one's father and building an altar to that insight. Then you have the thing, you know. So they would write a poem or do a painting or participate in a play or play anything dedicated. I mean, Saturn says, you know, any physical thing we do that we imbue with dedicated symbolism is a ritual. And so they would express their dream. And having expressed their dream in a creative way, they'd have the power of their dream, and they'd go back to their communities as seed Renaissance people. So that all really happened, right? So you brought in the, okay, the milkweed and the Asclepion and the thing and Chiron, and we go, right. And so Chiron goes, hey, I think everybody's here. We've got a dedication to dreaming. We've got a dedication to community well-being. And everybody game, that if you have a great dream or a great daydream, you're engaged in giving it outward creative expression of whatever one's own choosing, you know, in order to glean its power and contribute to. Everybody's up for that, right? Yes, we are. There we go. Yeah, all right. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you. Thank you, Cornelia. Thank you, Richard Badger, that we can't see. Thank you, whatever. Yes, we are. And so Chiron goes, hey, I think we got everything. Let's give everyone here an all-access backstage pass to the Asclepion, the ancient cultural center of intentional dreaming, healing, and theater. Yay, there we go. So we put that in the vessel too. Everybody gets an all-access backstage pass. There we go. So there. So we have milkweed. I'm just keeping track here of what we've put in the vessel, right? What we put in the vessel, we have the milkweed, the pleurisy root, the Asclepias tuberosa, soothes the pleura, and the pericardium. Do you smoke that too?
No, I've only worked with the tincture.
Tincture, milkweed tincture. All right, that's good.
And only that specific species. Some of the other species might be potentially toxic if tinctured. I mean, maybe not. People dispute it, but
also, of course, yeah. You know, planting it. I mean,
right,
yeah. Planting it. Yeah, Evangeline's big on planting, and there's another milkweed aficionado in our team as well, and the whole migrational connection. And then we have the Damiana, Bacopa, Lobelia, the wormwood, right, in our cauldron. and we can also put blessings that people want to type into the chat or say out loud into the cauldron. I like, you know, the Trickster Training Council that is just reinventing itself, but went for 12 years. a few people, one or two people here were in that. I love these experiments in atmosphere. And something I always use is in the pandemic 2020, you know, I was on an internet radio show with, you know, a Black couple. He was chief of police of Atlanta, it turns out, and she was his wise partner, counselor, Jungian person. And I asked the chief of police of Atlanta, one, did he feel that policing was a ministry? I don't know what he's doing now or if he's involved in Cop City, but we have a connection. We can dissolve hardness in his heart, whatever is necessary, or send him support for being good. But I asked him if he was worried about the former guy, Trump, who lost his case today against E. Jane Carroll. There, as the Sun and Uranus came together, there was an earthquake in Japan, and Trump was held accountable for many millions of dollars to E. Jane Carroll. Yes, and then I just distracted myself. Right, I knew I shouldn't have gone over there. What was I about to say? There we go. Powerful dreaming message last night from K.O. clarified the missing elements in the Ostra Brahma image too. Yes.
It was about the police chief.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Face Hunter. I have outsourced my mind to you. Thank goodness you're a trustworthy holder of it. Yes. So I said to the police chief, are you worried about Trump going to Tulsa, right? Which he was about to on the summer solstice, right? We're going to do a very different summer solstice. And the police chief said he was really concerned. And I said, well, my Trickster Training Council, we're creating an atmospheric mist, right? As we're going to do this each week. And I said, an atmospheric mist with lavender and psilocybe mushrooms. And we're wafting it over Tulsa so that anything up to no good fizzles like a wet firecracker fart. And the police chief of Atlanta said, I'll join with you in that. And he did. And so people are woof, woof, want to play. It's, you know, you never know, right? Just to offer everybody like woof, want to play. I do. So we did. We wafted psilocybe in our minds, you know, atmospherically, what we're going to play with now and forever, you know, psilocybe, mushroom, lavender. And he was like, yeah, right. And see if you can get me some mushrooms on the side too. We'll work on that. yes, all police should take mushrooms. Right. Calm down the amygdala. It worked. I mean, we do not presume credit or even causality in our experiments, but many bad things could have happened and everything bad that was planned fizzled like a wet firecracker fart. So in keeping with that play, you know, we have our vessel and the thing, and anybody, that's great. Yes, over here too. Yes, choose love, Bacopa from KO. Powerful dreaming message last night clarified the missing elements. Right, and Bacopa, yes. Okay. And whatever. So again, anything that in your heart, or if you would like to express it by typing or by saying, you know, a blessing, words, we can put words in our cauldron. I so love, when I was in Syria, when it was okay with Deborah Felmuth, and we found the calligrapher in the oldest souk in the world in Aleppo. He was grumpy at first, but then we were okay. And he did this beautiful thing. He wrote healing words with vegetable ink on rice paper, and then he put it in our tea so we could drink the words.
Oh.
I love that. So drinking the words, right? So feel free to put in our cauldron or your beverage cup. You know, so we're going to fill our cauldron, and then everybody can fill their cup. And if you don't have a cup, imagine you have a cup. It's really almost as good. And then we get to drink the blessings and drink the words, right? So whenever we feel like that, anybody want to put any words into the cauldron so we can drink the words?
Caroline, I'd like to just ask for some sort of a mist or a suggestion from you and Sean for, in North Carolina, we have a bill that's really important going through right now. And we had the governor will be vetoing it hopefully soon, but we used to have it so that there wasn't a supermajority, and this woman changed her from red to blue. And so now they have they may overturn this veto. So I'm wanting a mist to sort of protect that, you know, veto, to protect women and protect women's rights. And I don't know what to put in my mist, but I've been trying to do all the practical things I know to help convince people, you know, not to overturn his veto. So if you have any suggestions for what we could mist out to protect the women of North Carolina and the planet and the universe. what would you put in that mist for today? Yeah.
Devil's Club might want to jump in. Right?
Okay.
Yes. Well, in the entire Artemisia genus, because okay. Artemis is the exiled wild feminine.
Yes.
Artemis brushes all of that genus with her moonlight and dispels the untoward spirits and magnifies those which must be magnified.
Okay, and, great.
and Wormwood says Rebecca, that's right. And common sense says KO, that's really good. Oh, and we're putting these things in our cauldron. Lovely. Thank you, Faye. Tenderness, wonder from Rebecca, and common sense, saying reverent common sense, and Wormwood from Rebecca, and seeing things as they really are from Cornelia. Yes, 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 yes. And compassion and reverence from Adrian. That's really good. And you'd also said, Sean, some ways of, well, who knows when, recently, you know, that when you're making a tincture with rose, you always put a little bit of a thorn in there, right?
Yes.
And that's great. So the rose is so Venus, but it's got a thorn. It's why Saturn is exalted in Libra. You know, beauty wants a protector. When you prune a rose bush, it blooms more wonderfully. But the rose with the thorn might be good to put in our cauldron to waft over North Carolina and all places of suppressive tyranny, tipping and some well tipped over. But that's why part of what we're planting in our dedicated vessel now, but we're going to keep it going. You know, I sent Sean things going, you know, Tennessee, I mean, there's so much tyranny and the supermajorities of the insane dementors. Remember, mentors are the antidote to dementors. There we go. They're mentors, antidote to dementors. So there, we've outsourced authority to so many dementors. All right. So bring in the mentors. So that's when when I sent you the Tennessee piece, you know, just kind of, scary. It's dangerous out there, right? So then going, all right, these sub-governments of a minority that is full of, you know, cruelty and mayhem and tyranny. But so it's like, well, it's underneath the governance. And so to us, we go, well, then we put in a government of plants deeper underneath that to come up, right? I think that's part of what we want to make real, you know, a governance of plants allies. And so you can guide us in the ensuing weeks, and each person also to bring in a plant and to see it as, you know, in charge of defense or the environment or how things really should be, or, you know, we'll play in these realms, but, you know, and see what plants are like. Yes, I'm up for being Secretary of State, said we don't know who yet. Milkweed crosses borders, right? And it allows the butterflies to cross borders, so everything real. And then everything into the cauldron filled with lavender and psilocybe mushrooms. I like that. Color magic rose, a moral imagination. Oh, that's great. Thank you, Summer Star.
That calls to mind Jerry Snyder, who turned 93 yesterday, and who says all failures of charity and compassion are failures of imagination. And so, yes, extra yes to moral imagination.
Yes. And KO says color magic rose buds yellow, changes to white with red edges, love with a taste of passion.
Ooh,
lovely. So, are we good? Do we feel that our vessel is full? And we may want to put it, you know, everybody can ladle imaginary or real from the vessel into their cup so we can drink the words and the blessing and anything that supports our dedication to being our full selves, you know, ready for this time. Right, on a little toast of a thing.
And there is a two-word prayer I'd like to add that has become that Blackthorn, which grows on this land, has told me is the prayer, my prayer of the season, which is one of the old understandings of the letter connected with Blackthorn in the Om alphabet, was Morad Rune, and Rune is a word that simultaneously means deepest desire and mystery and secret and hidden knowledge and beloved. It's a term of endearment as well. You say Arun to you, my mystery. And Morad, more is make great. More is great, so Morad is to make great. So make great the beloved mystery of our hidden desire.
I'm sorry, I spaced out. Can you say that again for me, if not for everybody?
Yes,
thank you.
If Rune is hidden desire and inner knowledge and deep mystery, but also the name we call a beloved, and Morad is to make great, to exalt, then if we pray Morad Rune, we are praying for the beloved mystery of our deepest desire to be exalted and made great.
Excellent. Yeah, and may we have the dream or the daydream, right, for our deepest desire to form itself in our hearts and in our words, that we might even write it down this week and keep it to ourselves, but intend to bring it into fruition. That's great.
And that's what the tree is doing right now. Its buds are held very tightly, but right before the summer solstice, they will open into the white shimmering flowers that fill the air with a gorgeous perfume.
Wonderful. So our vessel is now our boat in which we set sail. And as we watch this closing video from Angelique Cujo, It does use the word fight a lot. I'm not fond of the word fight myself, but you know, what the hell. But it is great, and it gives us a little visual clue. So we're setting sail with our vessel in our vessel, you know, and we've drunk the blessings in the words, and we're going to waft the blessings out into the world as an atmospheric mist of cooling out the conflagration, so that everyone and everything under pressure is capable of responding rather than reacting. So thank you, team, and our first convening and Backstage Badger. We're ready for our video, in which while we watch it, we imagine setting sail in our boat and wafting things out with Angelique Cujo. Thank you, team. And here we go.
Got to understand what happens from here is in our hands. From mighty kingdoms of a distant land, turn the world upside down, yes we can. We just gotta rise up. So long, how far is it to get to where we're going? Don't you know together we are strong? We're gonna fight the madness till it's gone. We just gotta rise up.
Thank you, team. We're good to go.